Hello, and welcome to the Live Printing Impressions webinar, Drive Profits and Improve Sustainability, Optimize and Streamline Your Print Production, sponsored by Kodak. I'm Keith Whistler, and the host of today's event. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the help and widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Ask Question box. You can also use the Ask Question box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions during and at the end of the hour. You can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. Speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. Here today to discuss driving profits and improving sustainability, we have Dan Stolf, Miami Valley Publishing, Brad Nichols of Blip Communication, and myself, Keith Whistler, as moderator. I serve in the Center of Technology and Research here at Printing Industries of America. Printing Industries of America is the leading association in the world for the printing industry. Some of you will remember the Center for Technology and Research as GATF. My role as technology and research analyst consists of four primary focuses: consulting, training, writing, and product testing. Prior to coming aboard Printing Industries of America, I spent over 20 years in the commercial printing industry, both as a production operator and production management. I started in prepress, introducing Macintosh computers to typesetters, and have been implementing new technology throughout the printing process ever since. I've managed the transition of conventional prepress to digital at several organizations and have a vast amount of experience in prepress technology. I've also been involved with many other areas, managing estimating, customer service, and IT. My last role was as plant manager with a commercial printing company overseeing all operations. I'm a certified G7 expert and color management professional through ID Alliance and serve on our research committee as well as several other industry organizations. I enjoy experiencing how technology has impacted our industry and staying abreast of trends and future developments. Three trends in offset printing I wanted to point out are, one, shorter runs and tight deadlines continue to become the norm, and printers are looking to automation to accommodate that. Two, we see more printing organizations getting serious in their continuous improvement efforts. And three, the printing industry continues to move forward in their green initiatives. Any listeners who attended Print 13 in Chicago last week probably noticed the number of automated features included with the systems that were on display. As I travel to different facilities throughout the country, common focus is implementing automation to reduce touches, thus reducing mistakes and streamlining processes. I would not recommend any product or equipment change without first understanding how it will streamline your process. Trend number two is continuous improvement. You may be dismayed to know that average pre-tax profit margin in our industry is under 2%. There are a number of progressive companies we refer to as profit leaders who realize pre-tax profits are over 10%. Profits come from three areas: price, volume, or efficiency. We all know what we're seeing in price as we become more of a commodity product, so we need to increase our volume and efficiency. Statistics show us that profit leaders have 5% lower factory expenses compared to the average printer. One way some of them are achieving this is through continuous improvement in lean manufacturing. They continue to search out ways to save time and money. 5 minutes, savings per job can add up quickly, enabling increased throughput and volume. This trend accounts for the increase of attendees we see at our continuous improvement concert conference every year, which will be held at the end of March. A well-developed continuous improvement plan can provide opportunity for profit, which is a good segue to our third and final trend, sustainability in the environment. Regardless of what some may think, our industry is environmentally conscious and sustainable. We're planting more trees in this country than we are using. Many areas, such as the West Coast and the Northeast, are using the Forest Stewardship Council or the Sustainable Forest Initiative labels on both the items they print or on many of the items they print. Larger corporations are also insisting on the use of these initiatives. Our industry organization, Sustainable Green Printing Partnership, just celebrated its fifth year, and it continues to grow in membership. Companies are collecting and separating waste to improve recycling opportunities. And in March of 2012, the Hazard Communication Standard was amended by OSHA, and all companies now are required to have a hazardous communication program. A new updated guide is being produced and will be distributed through our affiliates. Printers are monitoring and reporting their VOCs and watching their wastewater discharge. Simply put, our industry is becoming greener. I'd like to reiterate the trends we just discussed before introducing our panel. One is automation, two is continuous improvement, and third is sustainability in the environment. Hope that serves as a lead into our panel discussion today. I'm delighted to introduce Dan Stahl. Dan is president and CEO of Miami Valley Publishing, a commercial offset printer from Ohio specializing in retail inserts. Dan, can you tell us a little more about you and your company?
Thanks, Keith. Yeah, I'll give it a try. I guess Miami Valley began in 1982 as a heat set offset retail insert printer. It was an adjunct spinoff from the local newspaper in Fairborn, Ohio. And in 1987, we were acquired by Canadian printing company Transcontinental. And after 22 years, in 2009, Transcontinental decided that we really weren't compatible with their future business model, and therefore we went through a management buyout in May of 2009. I happened to be fortunate enough to be with the company at that time for about 10 years, and in October of 2010 I became the owner, and therefore I'm now acting as president and CEO. Miami Valley largely services retailers and newspapers, and we are pretty much 100% involved in the production of advertising circulars. We do high volume, high version, heavily versioned work, and have web sizes from 36 inches to 66 inches. Serve a pretty large regional footprint, pretty much from Kansas City to the East Coast, north and south about as far as you can go.
Wow, that's impressive. Next, I'm pleased to introduce Brad Nichols. Brad is co-owner and vice president of Blip Communications, a commercial offset printer in Idaho offering all types of print work. Brad, could you tell us a little more about you and your company?
Sure. Blip Printers was founded in 1985 by my family. We started out as a quick printer, but quickly grew into a small commercial printer. We serve primarily southern Idaho in general. We've done work that's been seen, it's actually been shown by Kodak at Drupa and other print trade shows. We are a full-service shop. We do everything from the pre-press to the graphics, the pre-press, the printing, and the bindery. So that's pretty much Blip.
Okay. Thank you, Brad. So you've all heard me talk a little bit about the recent industry trends, and now I'd like to hear from our panelists. what you're seeing out there as printers is important to us. So keeping in mind the topic of this webinar, which is how to drive profits and improve sustainability by streamlining your print production, what are some of the things you're doing? Let's hear from you first, Dan.
Thanks, Keith. I think one of the first things that we noticed is the immediate time benefit as far as the amount of time it takes to run a plate through the Magnus. We can run a plate through in about 5 minutes for a 66-inch press. That just has immensely increased our throughput in that area. We've been using a process-free plate for 4 years now, and actually we kind of had a hand in pushing some of the innovation with Sonora. We have kind of gone from one extreme with run lengths. We were down to about 100,000 impressions on runs. We're getting up to close to 300,000 on some runs now. So we've definitely seen some enhanced runability. We've also just generally seen a huge direct labor saving. We have an enhanced job perception. When you take the processor out of the pre-press area, you don't have the concerns about, well, gee, whose turn is it to clean the processor, to stock the processor, to deal with moving the chemistry around. At the time that we made that transition, we were producing about 20 million pieces a week, so it was quite a chore. And the last thing that we've really noticed, I think, that's been important for us is going with some of the industry trends towards lean manufacturing and one-piece flow, is we were able to take space that was committed to the processors and move the post-plating operations closer to where we actually ran the plate. So we were able to consolidate the work area into something that was a lot more coherent and cohesive, and it really has created a much more user-friendly environment from the pre-press side. So those are probably the biggest things that we've noticed.
Fantastic. Brad, what are some of the things you're doing at Blip Communications?
Well, in regards to the Sonora plate, one of the things that it's helped us do is we, after getting rid of the processor, we were able to utilize all of the labor to do other things. We actually don't have anybody in pre-press operating the plate setter at this point. As the pressmen can eat their jobs, when they finish a job, they chew up the next one, start their plates, tear down the press, and by the time they're done cleaning up and ready to put plates on, their plates are ready for them. So, that's been a huge benefit there. It only takes us just under 3 minutes to burn a plate, a single plate for the 8-color 40-inch, so it's roughly 20 minutes to burn all 8. Having that streamlined operation, I mean, the plate setter is literally in the room next to the press room, so having that there and ready is just immensely important.
Absolutely. Well, it's very interesting. Let's talk some more about the Sonora plate. It's the process-free plates from Kodak, newest process-free plate. Many come off the CTP direct, ready for press. You guys have already listed some of the benefits you've seen from adopting these process-free plates and skipping that processing step. Is there are there any economic benefits that you might want to that you've tracked or that you might want to point out, or anything else that the group might find interesting?
Well, this is Brad again. When we went to the process free plates, we went from producing film and dealing with the film chemicals as well as the plate processing chemicals to a process free plate, and instantly you get rid of, well, we got rid of two processors, the cleaning and maintenance of two processors, the stockpiling of chemicals for two processors, the waste management from two processors, a lot of the legwork as far as, you know, in the old days of putting a plate on pin, putting film on pins, masking, hitting a button, waiting. I mean, you just get rid of all of that, and you end up with perfect plates that are ready to go in, you know, in less time than it took us to produce film. So
it's fantastic. It really takes a lot more than 5 minutes, I would think, out of each job at this point, and I'm sure those time savings really, really add up quickly over a year.
Absolutely.
Now let's move on to another question, and what I'd like to see is if we can share some of our experiences with the audience. What were the reservations that you and your team had about migrating to this technology across the business, you know, in the pre-press and the press room? You know, what did you experience, and how long did the adoption take? And Dan, we'll go to you first on this one.
Well, I think the first thing is the pre-press people were on board pretty much right away. You say process free, we're going to get rid of the chemistry, we're going to get rid of the waste disposal issues, all of those kinds of things. And certainly there was a great buy-in on that end. They liked the simplicity, I guess, with which everything kind of processed through the area. The press room is like many others. You introduce something new, and the pressman at first kind of, oh, well, gee, what's this new plate going to be like, and is it going to be as good as what we've been using? And really what we found is, despite some reservations, they work up just as quickly as any plate we had before. They actually are simpler to maintain. You can, we've actually plated up a job, had to stop a job to go run something else, come back to that job later, and been able to do that really more effectively with this plate than anything we did before. So there's actually been a try it, you'll like it kind of mindset, I think, that's happened in the press room, and it's been quite successful, despite probably a little more trepidation over there. And in terms of timing, it took no time at all. I mean, basically, you run the first couple of jobs, everybody sees it works very well.
Great. Brad, what did your team, you know, what reservations did they have, and how did you, you know, what were your experiences?
Right. Well, we had a very similar experience. We had, when we made the transition, it was, it took us all of a day because we were setting up a direct-to-plate machine for the first time. Literally, there is a technique to starting up these plates. It could be explained over the phone if necessary, but the pre-press technicians came in with our plate setter and everything. They set it up, went in and talked to the pressmen, who were the only skeptics of the product. And after the first job, you know, they liked it. And as they've used it more and more and gotten used to it, it's been very easy for them to use these particular products, the process-free product.
Great. Let's move on to another question. Sonora plates are Kodak's second generation of process-free plates. After thermal direct plates for commercial printers and the PFN plates for newspapers, Kodak claims that Sonora plates are comparable to mainstream process plates because they offer faster imaging, longer run lengths, higher print resolutions, and expanded print capabilities over other process-free plates. Dan, you switched from thermal direct to Sonora plates. What are some of the differences that you've seen?
The things that we've noticed in particular are the throughput on the Magnus is much faster on the VLF format. We can get a plate burned during the time it takes to do just a press plate changeover. So it eliminates that waiting for plates. If we need to do a reburn, we can do it very quickly and get it right out to press. In addition to that, there's an energy savings attached to that because it goes through a little faster. We're able to kind of ratchet down. You're into a technological area there, but as I understand, we operate a little lower energy level with a faster speed. So those are our big advantages versus the first generation of thermal direct. Again, there are some other things that go with it, but I know Brad's going to talk about a couple of those, so I'm going to pass along.
All righty. Well, the things that we've noticed, besides the quicker burning or imaging of the plate, rather, is they have a darker latent image, so you can actually see what's on the plate easier than you could with the thermal direct product. We have found that they actually run up a little quicker than thermal direct did, and the plates require a little less water to keep them clean than the thermal direct ones did. And one of the things that I failed to mention prior is part of our green efforts, we're an alcohol-free shop, so we do everything with alcohol subs, and these plates have been specifically engineered to work with pretty much everything, I guess. And they run up, you know, within a few sheets on our Heidelberg equipment. So,
okay. The next question I have, Brad, I'll direct to you first. You know, Blip Printers bills itself as Idaho's green printer. How important to your customers is that you are focused on the environment?
Right. One of the problems that we have where we live is that it's not really on the top of everybody's minds. As far as being the green company, it's an initiative that we started for ourselves because we want a better work environment for our employees, and it's nice to not have a print shop that smells like a print shop. So, we had talked about becoming FSC certified and doing all that other stuff, but that's currently just not important to any of our customers, which is unfortunate in some instances. One of the keys is to educate your customers to what you're doing, how you're making things better. I mean, I can certainly print on any FSC product. I just can't put the logo on it because it breaks the chain of custody. But we recycle all of our plates when we're done. We recycle all the scrap paper. We even recycle the pallets that our paper comes on. So, I mean, we do our best to keep our environment clean.
Dan, do your customers, you know, look to you for being environmentally friendly?
Well, I have to kind of agree with Brad in many respects. I think as printers, we're probably more conscientious and conscious of our environmental responsibilities and recycling and whatnot than many of our customers, not that they don't care. But one of your points earlier on was that the printing trade is unfortunately perceived so much as a commodity item that when you come down to that FSC or some other certification that's out there, getting a customer to pay a bit extra for it is really not in the cards from our side of it. However, more and more we've experienced government being involved, and there are costs of not doing these things. At one time, we were considered a significant waste generator by virtue of having the byproducts of plate processing chemistry. We took some steps to reduce that, and now we've virtually eliminated it. So we've gone from an environmental compliance situation where we were paying someone to come on site, take off drums of what was perceived as hazardous material, to the point that we are now a non-significant waste generator. We don't show up as a blip on any of the EPA websites or anything of that sort. So there's certainly an environmental benefit from the standpoint of running a business. So I think that's really one of the key things for us, is that it's not only the right thing to do, it's cost-effective for us to do it.
Okay. And was that was one of the big goals you had, was reducing the waste and becoming a green printer, is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. Actually, when I came here in 2000, I observed a couple of guys out here in Tyvek suits with face shields and gloves, and I'm like, what are those guys doing? And they take a big funnel and some 5-gallon buckets and start pouring it into a 55-gallon drum, and I'm like, well, why the heck are we doing that? Let's see if we can't do something to eliminate that, because it's a hazard to the employee potentially. You've got a chemical splash in potential. Again, you're generating waste that you're paying someone to haul away, and those are big things to be avoided in today's work environment.
Absolutely. Brad, did you guys have goals that you established prior to making the switch?
Well, our primary goals were to get rid of any sort of unnecessary chemicals and to reduce our the use of VOCs in our printing environment. So it was more or less just to clean it up for our employees and ourselves. Makes the place a better place to work.
Very good. Well, we're moving a little quickly here and kind of coming up to finishing up some of the questions that we had prepared here, which is a good thing because there's a lot of questions coming in from you guys. So let me go ahead and I'm going to wrap up what we have to say, and let's go ahead and start addressing some of the questions that are coming in from the audience. So based on trends, customer experiences, the process-free plate innovation, there really isn't a reason not to consider the transition. So let's just go ahead and open up the lines for questions and answers from our audience. And I'm going to go to the first one that I have here. And let's start with a question that's coming in. Has either printer printed staccato or random dot screening with the plates? And Brad, I'll go to you first on that one.
We haven't actually tried it with staccato. We stuck to Paragon screening, which is the particular AM screen we're using. But I understand that it has no issues because it'll hold a really, really fine dot, which is evident even in AM screening, because almost everything that we do at 200 lines. So,
okay, well, that's 200 line. That's certainly taking advantage of the high resolution. Dan, do you guys in your operations ever print any staccato or anything of that nature?
Yes, we've done staccato, to the earlier point, we really have had no issues with the plate. We think the plate works just fine. It performs equally well to anything we've ever tried.
Great. Here's another question. What are the benefits between the process versus the processless plates in the press room in particular? You see any benefits in the press room over, you know, I know pre-press guys got to be happy because I've cleaned some processors before, and that wasn't my favorite chore to do. So are there any benefits that are, you know, more focused in the press room? And I'll go to you with that one, Dan, first.
Okay, I want to make sure I understood the question. is there a benefit to the, if I understood it, was there a benefit to the processor plate versus the process-free plate in the press room?
I guess it says what are the benefits between process versus process-less in the press room? You know, is there, if they, you know, was there any benefits to the newer plate technology
okay.
that you've gone over, you know, within the press room, or is it pretty much, you know, once they got used to it, they were able to just, you know, keep rolling with them?
Yeah, I think in most applications they're they perform, I wouldn't say equally well. I think actually the process-free plate has a few advantages in the sense that it it seems to come up just a bit quicker. In most applications, we do a lot of heavily versioned work. So one of the other things that we really like about it is that the throughput in pre-press allows us to have the plates much more available in the press room. So it's kind of a function of, in that one-piece flow, who's your customer? Pre-press feeds the press room, and if the press room's waiting on plates because it takes time to run through a processor and a pre-bake and a post-bake and all those extra steps, things aren't quite as efficient. So we think there's been a good efficiency gain in the press area.
Yeah, I would think, especially if the few times that you would have a plate to remake, you know, that would go much quicker. Hopefully you don't have too many of those. But another question.
Sorry.
I'm sorry, go
ahead. Well, just to add to that, we have one customer whose average version on a web press is about 3,000 copies. So,
oh, wow.
If you're looking at an 8-plate change, if you can have 8 plates ready to go for the next version, you're able to make that change a lot more effectively than if you're just waiting. So it really helps us with those kinds of jobs where we're doing a lot of heavily versioned work.
Absolutely, you know, really streamlining the time that it takes to produce them, and that's a good point. Here's another question we have, and I'll send this one your way first, Brad. Question is, how do you QC the process-free plates? How do you, you know, quality control and check to make sure they're good?
Well, that's probably the easiest question to answer. You don't have to. Kodak, if their date codes are good, and Kodak hasn't said that, you know, we accidentally made some bad ones because everybody makes a lemon now and then. But if you've got a good package and you haven't stored it in properly or anything like that, you can rest assured you just stick it in the machine, put it on the press, and it'll run up. When we measure jobs on the press, from plate to plate to plate, or on repeat jobs, you can see that there is no variance in the plate itself. Even, you know, jobs that we ran 6 months ago, we burn a new plate, it's exactly the same. So it's as long as you're, you know, it and we don't actually build a curve for the plate. All our curves are based on ink on paper, and so we haven't really had to do any sort of quality checking on the plates themselves.
Okay. Yeah, you know, the need to linearize isn't as important probably as the need to, you know, curve to the press and the stock that you're running. Dan,
right.
What about
you?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brad.
Well, one of the things that we've discovered is that the plate is so linear by its nature that we actually had to put a bump curve of 5% at the 50% dot when we first started just to get up to swap specifications, and then we made curves for the plates in the paper and got rid of that bump curve.
Okay. Dan, do you have any special tricks with your QC, and do you find any have any specific ways and you know, processes that you do with it?
We really can't say that we've had any variation in that. We've looked at curves, but we haven't seen any need to adjust for the plate. We obviously have curves to a press or curves to a substrate. The one thing that we do like about the Sonora XP is that since we have that latent image, it does allow us to at least see the version number on the plate. We don't have the cross referencing issue that we had with some of the earlier versions of things, where we had to write upper yellow 400C or something on it to just make sure that we lined it up to the right job. So that's probably not directly aimed at the question, but frankly, we just aren't seeing anything that has caused a variation in plate performance.
Very consistent. Great. Here's another question that's probably more focused to the press room. And the question is, have there been any changes with the fountain solution maintenance, you know, or anything that you've ran into on the press that have made, any changes with the plate apparent? Are they making any, changing the amount of times that they're, needing to change solution or anything like that? And I'll go with to you first, Dan, on that one.
Well, once again, I hate to say we haven't changed much. We thought that we might get into potential for, we're going to have more waste because it's got to work up on press. Are we going to have, we got to go through more fountain solution? Are we going to go through any of that? And the reality has been that everything's pretty much maintained the same level that it did with a processor plate. So we're not really experiencing that. We really just don't see any variations in that whatsoever at this point.
And Brad, how about you? Have you guys had to do any extra maintenance in the press room with this new plate?
No, actually, you just changed your fountain solution as often as we ever did. It's just like running any other plate, as far as, I mean, it doesn't cause any issues specific to its own. It just works. So it's not something that we've had to find a way to accommodate something.
Okay.
I like how you said that, Brad, because, if you want to put too much silicone on something, an operator can do it. but it doesn't mean that it has to be that way, and I think that's what we're really saying, is that we really haven't modified anything in those areas. The fountain solution has not been an issue. Actually, the Sonora XP versus the earlier versions that we were using seems to come up faster, so we're probably using a bit less.
Okay. I'm going to have to admit to a few technical difficulties and ask if someone else on the team could grab one of these questions I've been prioritizing. I can't see the whole, read the whole question. So, Alexis, is there any way that you could take one of the high-priority ones? And hey, there it is. Here's a new question. Have they ever experienced a set of image Sonora plates that were exposed to white light between 8 to 24 hours? And how was the performance affected when it got to press? Are they still usable? So white light, how much of an impact is that having on your plates? Let's go to you first, Brad.
Well, we keep our plate setter in a dark room. We burn the plates as we need because they burn so quickly. We don't have to burn them 24 hours in advance, and if you do burn them 24 hours in advance, just turn them over. As long as they're not, the faces aren't subjected directly to white light, you could leave them out in a room for 2 or 3 days without it causing too much of a problem. Maybe even longer, I'm not really sure. We've never had them, we've never had to do that. Like I said, we pretty much burn our plates on demand, and that prevents any sort of spoilage.
Okay. So as long as you keep them, you know, protected, you're able to store them and not have any trouble. And Dan, have you had any issues with light and hitting the plates that you know, and how you're storing, or had to change anything there?
We've in our pre-press area, we obviously have a controlled environment, so we don't have any white light exposure there. What we've done is we've actually enclosed our plate carts just with some plastic sheeting, dark plastic sheeting, to eliminate the potential that they are going to sit out in a white light area for an extended period of time. Well, we do store some of the plates in the pre-press area before they're ready to go out to press. But in the odd situation that they would go out there and sit for any length of time, we haven't experienced any loss issues or any problems there. I can't say we've really left ourselves open to having a plate in a white light environment for 24 hours. It's our understanding that you could still use it, but we really haven't felt a need to go out and tempt fate.
Yeah. Well, that's, in a lean manufacturing environment, you're probably just going straight from your, you know, imaging that plate and moving directly into the press, which is, you know, previously as a plant manager, that's what I wanted to see was, you know, that continuous flow of manufacturing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here's another question that we have. We have long runs of 200,000 and up, and the question is, are process-free plates capable of these longer runs, and what has your experience been with the long runs? And I'm going to go to you first on that, Dan, because I would think in your environment you've probably pushed the limits of you know, not just these plates, but any plates that you have. Can you tell us a little bit about the run lengths that you've been experiencing with it?
Sure. Right now, our average run length, we're probably right at the 200 to 250,000 range. You can get a plate up to 300,000 depending on substrate. And again, we noticed an improvement of late with the Sonora XP. We think that's really been an improvement. Now, you know, you take a processorless plate, I'm sorry, a processed plate, yeah, it's going to be a little different animal, but to your point earlier, Keith, what we're seeing are shorter runs. So the customers don't demand those long runs that we used to have, and we've kind of done a bit of an analysis, and I'm sure there's a point where you could argue that if you reintroduced chemistry into our environment, you might see a benefit on an extremely long run. But if you're looking at a run of, say, 1 million, if you're going to do 5 sets of plates, that's probably still less expensive than reintroducing the processor, the chemistry, the labor, the waste disposal, and all of those items that come into play. So it's very important that people look at their business. But, again, we're seeing runs are coming down. Run lengths are coming down, version counts. There's a lot more variability in what we see from customers where it used to be a nice vanilla run, and all of a sudden you're doing 20,000 of these and 40,000 of those. So the Sonora XP is ideally suited for those kinds of jobs. And I'd say 200,000 is very doable. Again, if your equipment's in good order and you got a good PM program, and your operators are on top of things, you can push it out to 250, 300,000.
Wow. Outstanding. Brad, do you, in your business, have you been pushing those plates? Do you get up to the 200,000 range much, or your industry, well, kind of, you know, more on the, you know, seeing the trends of shorter shorter runs and need it yesterday type of scenarios.
Right, right. Well, typically our customers are the kind of customers that say things like, if I had wanted it tomorrow, I would have ordered it tomorrow. So, but typically our run lengths are no longer than about 20,000 pieces. So, and at that short of a run length, we haven't had any issues, obviously, because we wouldn't. So, I, you know, that's not a really great question to ask me. It's when we were really busy, when we were changing plates a lot, I can tell you that, you know, the fountain solution does get a little dirty looking, but it always works. And, you know, you're supposed to do your maintenance anyway, like everybody else is saying. So.
Okay. Yeah, maintenance definitely keeps things running smoothly. So here's another question that I think is interesting. Have any of you made plates for other printers in emergency situations? And if so, how do they hold up from after you image until they are run? You know, meaning, again, back to that amount of time between when you image a plate and when you actually put it on. Do any of you ever partner with other organizations where you've had to send some plates over to them, or is there a story on how long, you know, these, you know, plates have lasted between being, you know, imaged and actually put onto the press? And I'll go to you first with that, Brad.
All right. Well, we haven't actually had to produce any plates for anybody else, mostly because, well, we don't have anybody in our neck of the woods that would have something similar or compatible. As far as imaging something and then seeing how long you can wait before you throw it on the press, we have had occasions where a pressman has run out a set of plates and then gone and just left them on the end of the machine and come back after a three-day weekend, put them on the press, and ran them. So once they're imaged, they're still stable. It's not like they're going to go bad because you imaged them. And then as far as transportability, you just got to keep them out of the light. And, you know, if you had somebody that could potentially use them, I don't see it being an issue. You just have to tell them how to run them up.
Okay. And Dan, have you ever, you know, had to send your plates to another facility or had any issues or anything along those lines?
No, we haven't sent any plates to anyone. I know that. Internally, we, as you observed earlier, we kind of try to go JIT as much as possible. I just checked with our pre-press folks. We've had jobs that have gotten plated, and for some reason we'll have a customer say, well, gee, you know, we're not ready to release that just yet, but it's already been plated, so it's sitting, or there's been some delay. So we have held plates in pre-press for up to about 48 hours before they'll go out to the floor. It doesn't happen very often, but it has, and we've had no issues with that. And to Brad's point, we have had plates that we've worked up and come back and run a couple of days later. Once they're worked up on press, they are stable, and we're able to use them from that point.
Okay, well, that leads to another question that I have here, and I think you probably just, you know, kind of answered it. The question was, you know, how reusable the plates are, and whether, you know, gumming and storing and going back to press has ever been an issue on, you know, when you go back on to press with it. Dan, I think I just heard you say that you've had the same, you know, had, you know, no problems with that. How about you, Brad? Have you guys been able to pull them off and gum them up and maybe go back in at a, you know, maybe say another, you know, week or so later or anything like that? You ever run into that?
If I asked my pressman to do that, he'd kill me. the closest thing I've had to that is where we've had a long run. The pressman got it set up Friday night, cleaned his press, just left the plates on, came back Monday morning, and actually ran the job. That was no issue. I haven't had an instance where, because we don't save plates anymore. Most of the time, the jobs are unique, and, well, actually, pretty much all of the jobs are unique. So there's really no sense in us saving plates.
Yeah, I think
trying to store them.
Storing plates kind of went out with film. You know, at least it did for me and my experience. So, we're able to image them so quickly that you can almost image a new one and have it out to them quicker than they can gum it and store it. So, I am looking for another question, and again, I'm continuing to have some technical difficulties with the. With the system here, and I was wondering if either Alexis or Derek can, you know, here we go. Let's see. We covered the press room, and I think I kind of know maybe the answer to this too, but one of the questions coming up is, was there any hesitation from management and beyond you guys that, you know, going forward with the process-free plates, and for that matter, you know, was there any, anyone in either the management team or the sales, you know, staff, was there any hesitation, or what kind of concerns did you come across with some of your peers? And I'll go to Dan, you first on this one.
Well, I think anytime you say technology and pre-press in a staff meeting, everybody kind of perks up and pays attention. But when you start looking at the elimination of chemistry, one of the things I guess that we're pretty sensitive to is we're in a, for air service purposes, we're in an environmentally non-attainment area. So we have scrubbers and actually RTOs that we have to certify, and the owner has to sign on those every time. So when you start telling me or a general manager or a CEO in a company that you're going to be able to eliminate chemistry from the work environment, so you're going to have fewer issues with the EPA, you're going to have fewer issues with employees potentially taking a chemical splash, you're going to eliminate all those waste disposal issues, there's an awful lot of interest right away. So the buy-in was all very positive from that perspective. And then once you say, okay, so now we've found this desirable aspect, how's our customer going to be impacted by that? And that's where we found Kodak to be very, very customer oriented in helping us move this project forward. It's been a great product for us, and again, in our application, we couldn't be happier. So the buy-in was virtually immediate. We certainly kicked it around the table a while, but I'd say within an hour, everybody kind of came to an understanding that, yeah, this has to happen.
Okay. And Brad, how about there at Blip? Was there any hesitation with other members of your management team or your sales staff or anything of that nature?
No, actually, there was no hesitation. Once we started looking at the products that were available and we started working with Kodak on it, the only people who were questioning our decisions were our other vendors trying to sell us another product. So, like I said earlier, it's a great product. We had very, very, very small issues all along the line, just things that had to get worked out. But as soon as they were, we haven't had a plate failure of any sort in over, well, it's been 3 or 4 years since we've had any sort of plate-related issue. So, but as far as getting management to buy into it, we all just looked at each other and said, hey, this eliminates the need for a person, and this saves us a lot of time, and, you know, if you factor in the the power, the chemicals, and the all the stuff you have to take care of, it actually saves you money. It did per plate in our instance. It saved us a little money, and you end up with a better product in the end.
Okay. We're starting to run a little low on time here, so we're going to wrap up the questions. But before we go, I wanted to see if you guys could summarize the top three benefits and that you've ran across with the process-free plates. And Dan, I'll start with you. If you had to list the top three things that you've seen as a benefit, what would they be?
I'd say it's pretty much time, chemical waste, and the elimination of the clutter in the workflow.
Okay. And Brad, yourself?
Yeah, the big ones for us have been time, space, and basically just the ease of use. Yeah,
okay.
And as far as space goes, that's space storing all the other stuff you don't need anymore. So,
very good. Well, it looks like we're just about out of time today. So on behalf of Printing Impressions and Kodak, I want to thank you for attending today's webinar. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archives and upcoming webinars. And again, we thank you very much. We have a slide here that has the link to a survey. I ask that you go into that. And again, thank you very much, and have a great afternoon.